I feel like today's guest needs no introduction, but it would be a complete disservice to not share all of his accolades. Today, I'm talking with Seth Godin. He's an author, entrepreneur, and most of all, a teacher. In addition to launching one of the most popular blogs in the world, he has written 22 best-selling books, including The Dip, Linchpin, Purple Cow, Tribes, and This Is Marketing, which was an instant bestseller in countries around the world. His newest book, This Is Strategy, Make Better Plans, releases this week and offers readers a practical framework for what an effective strategy looks like and feels like in today's fast-moving, chaotic, and diverse world. This Is Strategy allows readers to zoom out and see the bigger picture and understand the systems that are shaping their lives at work, in business, and in day-to-day challenges. Seth contends that by recognizing and mastering these systems and prioritizing long-term thinking over instant gratification, we can make smart, purposeful choices today that will lead to long-term growth. In my conversation with Seth, he shares his motivation for writing this book, the four elements that are critical for an effective strategy, and the importance of identifying and connecting with our smallest viable audience. On a personal note, when I started my product business in 2008, Seth's work was a major catalyst in helping me gain marketing momentum. He has a no-nonsense approach. He's concise and clear with his thoughts, and that really resonates and gets your wheels turning, which you will hear in today's episode. Today's episode is brought to you by our Proof to Product Labs program. Labs is a dedicated space for product-based business owners to connect, collaborate, and hold each other accountable as they work towards their goals. Each month inside of Labs, we have CEO check-ins, coaching calls, and community roundtables to discuss important and timely topics that are affecting product sellers. To learn more, head to prooftoproduct.com/labs. Again, that's prooftoproduct.com/labs. I'm Katie Hunt, wholesale expert, business strategist, and mom of four. I'm also the host of the Proof to Product podcast. Since 2011, I've coached thousands of brands whose products can be found on the shelves of indie shops and big box stores all around the world. If you are a creative entrepreneur that makes and sells physical goods, you're in the right place. Here on Proof to Product, you'll learn new strategies for product development, sales, marketing, and more. It's like your weekly dose of business school, and we're going to help you confidently grow your revenue in your own way and at your own pace. So let's get started. Hey, Seth, welcome to Proof to Product.
Thank you for having me, Katie. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for being here. I am a longtime fan of your work and also very much enjoyed your new book, This Is Strategy, Make Better Plans, which we're going to talk about today. Thank you for writing it.
Well, coming from a strategist, that means a lot. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I'm sure my listeners are already familiar with you and the work that you do. You know, you've written 22 best-selling books in 39 languages. Your blog has over 9,000 posts that you share daily. I was even texting with our mutual friend, Chelsea Shukov from Sugar Paper today, and she said that your wisdom has literally changed the trajectory for her.
The time I spent with Chelsea, I think of often. She is a rock star.
She really is. So Seth, I hope you know that the work you do is impactful and important. And I would just love for you to share a little bit about what drives you to continue doing this work.
It's hard when we're surrounded by all the gloom and doom that the media makes money from to realize just how much privilege we each have, that we are connected. Here you and I are using a machine that didn't even exist in science fiction, that we have the ability to have a kiwi for breakfast, that there's a roof over our head, and on and on and on. And we're wasting it. We're wasting it because we don't often lean into possibility, into choosing to make things better. One of the reasons that people don't is because they've been indoctrinated to not ask. They've been indoctrinated to do what they're told, do their job, go home and watch Netflix. And a key arc of my career is to help people see the systems that are around us and decide to do something about them. And I thought capturing all of that energy in a book might be a good way to start the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, your book mentions that effective strategy contains four key parts. It was systems, games, empathy, and time. I would love for you to explain why each of these pieces is critical for a strong strategy in both our business and our personal lives.
Well, you know, as a strategist, I think you were probably a little surprised at my list of four. I think most people who do strategy are, but I haven't come up with a better list yet. So here we go. Systems are invisible and they are all around us. They are the college industrial complex, the military industrial complex, the wedding industrial complex. It's a system that says you're supposed to serve salmon at your wedding. Who made that up? I don't know, but that's one of the rules. And if you are trying to show up to make a change happen, you don't see the system and you don't understand why things are the way they are. Very hard to engage with the people in the system because they think the system is normal and you're trying to change it. The second one is games. Games aren't just things we do for fun with a board. Games are any situation where there are players and moves and outcomes. And calling it a game gets you two big advantages. The first one is that you can use game theory because we've studied a lot about which moves will lead to which outcome. And the second is you won't take yourself so seriously because if a move you make doesn't work, it doesn't mean you didn't work. It doesn't mean you're rejected. It means your move was rejected and you have a chance to make a better move. Third one is time. Everyone gets tomorrow every day. So how will we invest it? How will we spend it? And more than that, things compound if we're doing them right. So this podcast, so generous of you to run, the first week, I'm guessing you had fewer than 20 listeners. And now you have millions of downloads. How did that happen? It happened because of time. We need to see time and see how things unfold. And the last one is empathy, which is you do not have the power to insist. So our friend Chelsea makes beautiful letterpress paper goods. She can't go to someone and say, you must buy my stuff. It was very hard for me to make it and it's beautiful. All she can do is create the condition for someone to choose to engage with what she made. To do that, she has to imagine what it's like to be them. She has to show up for other people. And so when we think about the strategy of making an item, when we think about the gift show, which my mom used to go to for years and years and years, empathy is often missing. We think we're supposed to make something that we would like. That's not true, because we're the only person in the world who's exactly like us. We need to make something other people would like.
Okay, this is fascinating because I think so often the things people do create and choose to sell are based on their own needs. They had an issue, they had a problem, whatever it might be. And that might spark the idea. But to your point too, you need to be listening to those around you to figure out what the needs are in the market before you can actually launch that. And that's the empathy piece that you so eloquently described.
The person who invented the windsurfer, Boyle Schweitzer, did it because he wanted to go windsurfing. The reason there are a lot of windsurfers in the world is because he figured out how to make it something that other people wanted, not because otherwise he just could have made one.
You know, which of these four pieces of the strategy do you feel is most commonly overlooked and why?
Systems invent culture to protect themselves, and systems try very hard to be invisible. We so embrace and engage with the systems that we forget that they're even there. So the others matter a great deal, but the system one, I see over and over again. People think that what they're doing is normal and appropriate and going to be that way forever. And when a change shows up, they do everything they can to push back. So I'll give you an example. In the book, I talk about Climax Cheese Company. And Climax makes an extraordinary blue cheese, but they don't make it from milk, they make it from legumes. It's a vegan cheese. And they entered the Good Food Awards, which is a big deal in the food business if you win one of those. And they won for best cheese, which would have transformed their adoption in stores, gourmet stores and stuff like that. And 2 weeks before the awards, they got a call from the organizer saying, we know we told you we were going to win and that you should come, but don't come. We're reneging your award. We're taking it away from you. And the reason is that two cheese bullies in Vermont heard that he was going to win, and they used all the pressure they had to push back because they mistakenly think they're in the milk business, not the cheese business. And they saw a systems change that made them uncomfortable. And there are cheese bullies everywhere we look.
There are. I can think of examples in our industry as well of things that have tried to expand and change, but yet certain people are trying to maintain the reins of, no, this is how it's always been done. I'm curious, why do you think that people get stuck or feel indecisive when it comes to choosing and moving forward with a particular strategy? People seem to have a tough time getting started, from my point of view.
Oh, yeah, for a whole bunch of good reasons. And Steve Pressfield has written about this in The War of Art, resistance, the fear of being seen. People don't like to talk about their strategy because if it's intuitive and you keep it quiet, you're not on the hook. You can always change it quietly in the dark. Whereas if you claim it, you have to defend it. But talking about your strategy before you launch is the single best way to make your strategy better. And so what we need to do is undo, and it's particularly noxious and dangerous for women because misogyny has pushed women to just do tasks. And to announce that you have a strategy is hard because people say, who are you to have a strategy? But there's change and people who need you to make the change. So go make it.
When you were talking about systems in the book, you mentioned that there were two myths that you commonly see. The first was that individuals have unlimited power within systems. And the second is that we have no power, zero power within these systems. Can you elaborate on this a little bit?
Right. So this goes back to the idea of empathy. If you have unlimited power, and you're some, you know, billionaire who owns a car company or whatever, you can just insist. But it doesn't work because you can't insist. And that's frustrating. But if you look at a system like the system that's causing climate change and say, I have no power, and you just give up, then nothing's going to get better. And the right answer is somewhere in between the two. Because what we do have the power to do is organize and connect to find the smallest viable audience, to lean into that, offering it to the people who want it, and then it spreads over time. So a key part of what I'm trying to help people see is you have power, just not as much as you want.
The minimal or the small viable audience section of your book was really inspiring. And I think talking about it in the way of it grows, it compounds, like we start as an individual, then we get others involved. Tell us more about why that's particularly important for businesses.
You're never going to sell to everyone. You know, I've had a bunch of bestsellers and none of them has reached more than 3 million people in the United States, which means to a rounding error, I have 0% market share. No one has read any of my books. It's enough. So that's where we begin. You're never going to reach everyone. Starbucks doesn't reach everyone. Kraft Singles don't reach everyone. You know, Dick Hens don't reach everyone. But the real reason is it puts you on the hook. Because what I'm challenging you to do is tell me who's the someone. Who is the one person, the 10 people, the 50 people, that if they saw this, they would cross the street to buy it? If you can't name those people, you need to make a better product. If you can name those people, you just got your first 10 customers. And if your product is amazing, they will tell their friends. And then you're off to the races. So almost all the people who I see fail in this product space of, you know, things aligning with stationery and gift items and stuff, they fail because they make something that's average for average people, as opposed to specific and extraordinary for a few people.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I also think that they give up too quickly. I think they feel like they're not reaching enough people or they don't see success fast enough. And in reality, we know that success takes a lot of time to build.
Well, it depends on what you think of as success. If you write a novel and you mail it to 30 book publishers and they all reject it, it's easy to say it's a failure. If you write a novel and make it into a PDF and post it on a bulletin board somewhere and it gets downloaded and shared and downloaded and shared, you don't make any money, but it's a success. And if it gets shared enough, the phone rings and it's a publisher who wants to buy your next book, right? So defining success is really important here. Did you delight the smallest viable audience? That doesn't take that long. And then you get to do it again.
Speaking of this audience and how we're connecting and how we're getting visibility within the business, I commonly hear from product-based business owners who feel that they need to rely on social media for that visibility and then also the sales, that growth of the smallest viable audience, right? Do you think social media is a productive strategy for small business owners today? Or do you think it's more of a distraction than a positive or a negative, I guess?
Well, someone's going to win the lottery, but it's probably not going to be you. That being an unpaid employee of TikTok, Instagram, and the rest is really in the interest of TikTok, Instagram, and the rest, but maybe not for you. That if there are a million people who want to be an influencer or sell some product direct to consumer, and 50 of them are going to have a home run, I think those are terrible odds. And I think the other thing that goes on is the feedback you get from the minute you start is all wrong. You're getting feedback about how many likes you have, about how many, quote, friends you have. These people don't like you and they're not your friends. But we start doing things to get their attention, but they're not our smallest viable audience. So I think where social media does kick in is this. When you start to resonate with the smallest viable audience, they will post about you on social media, not you. And that's great. That's a symptom that you're doing the right work. But if you're busy doing social media grooming all day, I think you're hiding. And I think you've been tricked by a billionaire into doing what they want you to do.
Yeah, that's a strong point. So what would you recommend alternatively? I talk a lot about relationships in business and creating that connection with your customers as best you can. Do you agree with that strategy? Do you think there's other strategies they should be utilizing?
Well, relationships with who, right? Are we talking about getting shelf space or are we talking about the end customer?
Both, but I mostly work with folks who are looking for shelf space.
Right. Okay. So I begin with this. Any merchant who is going to put your thing on the shelf has to take something off the shelf because the shelf is full when you get there, which means that that merchant has to explain to their boss why they did this if sales per square foot go down. This is a problem. So when we show up to talk at a B2B level to a merchant, we are creating tension. We are doing it on purpose. That's okay. We are basically saying, you have a chance to stock this or you have a chance to disappoint your customers. Which would you prefer? And that's what it's going to come down to. That's the only reason they're going to carry it. Not because they're your friend, but because they're visualizing a future where their boss says, I got people coming in looking for X, Y, or Z. Why don't we stock it? So we create tension when we launch something new on purpose. So then you have to create the condition for people to go to the store and ask for it. If they're not doing that, then the merchant is doing all the work and they're not eager to have you be their partner because they already have someone they're doing all the work for. So what we have to figure out is, back to the smallest viable audience, instead of hoping to win the lottery and have Macy's put us in every one of their remaining stores, we're saying, what's the smallest number of stores in the smallest number of places that I could be in where I could show this was working? And if it starts working, am I offering enough of a margin to the merchant that they want more of what I do? And if you got merchants saying, I want more of what you do, you're onto something. But if you're waiting to get picked and waiting for the person who picks you to make everything work out okay, you're going to wait a very long time.
Definitely. What about those that are selling direct to consumer? How do you think they expand their minimum viable audience?
Okay, so DTC is a different thing because the people who are spending money are spending their own money, whereas the merchant is spending the company's money. And it begins by building a product that's worth talking about, something remarkable. And I'll give you a super simple example. There was a woman that I met years ago who was a sort of well-known but not very successful kids musician. So she would go to Bruce Springsteen's kids' birthday party and sing folk songs for them and stuff. And she had an album and kids loved it. So she made another one. They were really well produced. And she was working on her third album. And here's the deal. If you're a parent, by the 400th time you've heard Frankie, Frankie, blah, 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 you really want to get another one. So, right? So the parents are eager to buy whatever record she has, but there are not enough of those people in the world yet. So what I came up with her was simple. I said, every time someone buys a CD, send them two copies of the same CD. Because if you have two copies of the same CD, you got to give one of them away. And every time she did that, she doubled the size of her audience. And so when you give people a chance to be generous and talk about what you do, they will. And so it's not enough to say the world needs this piece of paper craft because it doesn't. It's enough to say the world needs something to talk about, and I'm going to create something for them to talk about.
Talk to me about the power of iteration and building upon existing strategies, because what you're talking about of giving away, you know, being generous, giving away a second copy of the CD, we need to be constantly iterating to stay on top of the market, to just, to again, build that audience. But you mentioned in the book that Rome was in fact built in a day and that it was just incomplete and that the role of the people building Rome was to improve the systems and grow the community. I can see and hear some of those same lessons as you're talking about these examples in here in our interview, but what would you say about iterating and building upon existing strategies for business?
Right. So this is the element of time. Rome, as the day they called it Rome, Rome was built. Now the question is, how do you make Rome better? And the difference between Rome and a city you never heard of is they kept making Rome better. So tomorrow, a lot of people who are listening to this want a job without a boss. That's really what they want. They want to do what they did yesterday, get paid fairly, and have the freedom to do it when they want to do it. But that's not what this project is. This project is to be your boss and to be a better boss than you're currently being. To decide what you intend to have happen tomorrow and a month from now and 6 months from now. To not wait for someone to tell you what to do, but you decide what the iterations are. And the people who have been running Rome for thousands and thousands of years never said, let's turn this place into a ski resort, because they understood that that would be too hard for them. But once you've decided we're going to be a center of commerce and culture, now you have to make investments, right? Now you have to build museums and build an airport and all these other things over time. And that's the same thing for every person who's listening to this. If you're building a business, you're building a business, not doing your job.
How do they determine what to iterate on first? Because obviously every business is different, but where do you suggest they focus first?
Well, this is where your strategy comes in. If your strategy is, we're going to build a brand that people talk about, then you better be iterating every day on what makes people talk about you. And so, you know, there's that ridiculous company Mischief that their only business is people talk about them. They do things like buy Louis Vuitton handbags and cut them up into pieces and stuff. So if you come into Mischief with an idea and it's not worth talking about, they're not going to do it. On the other hand, if you say our strategy is we are going to be the go-to store for upper middle income brides in this town. When they come, they need to buy paper goods or things for their wedding or stuff. It's going to be safe and reliable and right down the middle with a little bit of interesting things around the edges. If that's our strategy, then as the culture changes, you better make sure you're changing to go with it. And your strategy isn't real estate, so you don't have to spend a lot of time looking for a different building. But other businesses like McDonald's have hundreds or thousands of people who all they do is look for real estate. So again, you got to figure out a strategy that will determine how you spend your day.
Yeah, that'll determine the focus and the activities that you do. What's your top takeaway that you want people to have after listening to this episode and reading This Is Strategy?
I want people to find a partner or two partners or three partners, people they're not related to, people, maybe not your best friend, but who understand the journey, and to meet once a week. Zoom is fine. Just for half an hour to tell each other what your strategy is and what you've done to support it. Because what I promise you is within 2 weeks, you will start changing your behavior in anticipation of that meeting. If we don't talk about a strategy, whatever the problem is, our strategy isn't going to get better. The first rule is we got to talk about it.
Yes. Couldn't agree with you more. I actually just returned from hosting a retreat for my clients where we spent the entire few days talking strategy and vocalizing what they wanted from their business. And that creates that accountability piece, but then also just the drive to continue moving forward. So I love your idea of telling people to find some friends and vocalize their strategies as they grow. So, you know, Seth, you've done a lot of incredible things throughout your career. What are you most proud of?
Professionally, what I keep track of, I have no idea how many people read my blog. I have no idea how many people follow me on LinkedIn or whatever. What I am proud of professionally is the people who I taught something to, what did they teach to someone else? Because I'm not trying to teach everyone. I'm just trying to plant seeds for change. And so if I can make an impact on Katie Hunt, and Katie Hunt makes an impact on somebody else, and that person makes an impact on somebody else, that's my job.
Well, you're doing just that, Seth, I promise. Thank you for being here. This is Strategy Make Better Plans. It is going to be available this week. It comes out in your local bookstores and online. We will be sure, listeners, to include Seth's links in the show notes so that you can easily purchase your copy and also learn more from Seth. Seth, thank you for being here today. It was such a privilege to chat with you. You have impacted so many people, myself included. And just know that these seeds of change and you pouring into me has helped me pour into others just as you're hoping it would. So you're doing it.
Wow. Thank you, Katie. Go make a ruckus. The work matters. And the magic you make, that makes a difference. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Seth. I very much appreciate Seth spending time with us today. His new book, This is Strategy, Make Better Plans, is now available in your local bookstores or online. This is not just another strategy book that's only for business leaders or people with MBAs. This book is for everyone looking for a resilient strategy in their life during these uncertain times. So links again are in the show notes if you're looking for them. I also want to remind you of the homework that Seth gave you. Go find some friends, share your strategies with them. When we vocalize what we are working on, when we are open to feedback, and when we collaborate with others, our mission and our impact will expand. And if you have not yet found your community of product peers, I want to invite you to join Proof to Product Labs at prooftoproduct.com/labs. Our next peer mastermind session is coming up soon, and this is where you can get direct feedback on your products, your marketing, your sales strategy, or anything else that you are working on. Labs is a dedicated space for product-based business owners who work across industries and across the world. We're building connections, we're collaborating, and we're holding each other accountable as we work towards our goals. So again, you can find information at prooftoproduct.com/labs. Thank you for listening until the end today. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with a friend or share it on social media and tag me. I'm at Proof to Product everywhere, and I will do my best to reshare. Have a wonderful week, everyone, and I'll be back soon with a new episode.